Good morning, everyone. Happy Sunday morning and welcome to SaaS, the Screen, Air and Stage Show. Another Sunday morning with your regular hosts, Nick Angus and Hannah Schauder. Now, we are already over halfway through season two and we cannot believe we're already here. It has been a fantastic season so far and a really, really busy season as well.
Different kinds of themes. We looked at revenge. We looked at the meaning of life. And for today, we're going to be looking at the idea of tradition and that concept. Now, this is a bit of a weird one. I'm not going to lie. I think this is a weirder choice from us.
I think it's going to be really, really interesting because I think, like we looked at revenge last week, and like revenge, tradition underlies a lot of pieces of entertainment. And sometimes it's bold, sometimes it's subtle. And I think what's really, really cool is that we see so many different pieces of entertainment today, and they come from different traditions and different directorial teams that have different traditions and values. And then to see how they relay them into the pieces of entertainment will be really, really interesting. And I think the ones that we look at today, they kind of cover different traditions. And I think one question we're going to be looking at today is, how is tradition kept alive in the entertainment industry?
Absolutely. So something I really want to explore for this show is actually the proper definition of tradition, you know, which is the transmission of customs or beliefs from generation to generation, or the fact of being passed on in this way. And I find that whole idea of things being passed on generation to generation, just that little phrase, generation to generation, I find that really interesting because we'll also be looking at a lot of how traditions can change. Are they rejected? Are they reinforced as the generations go on? And it'll be really interesting to look at how these traditions are also reinforced.
And how they've adapted over time as well.
Absolutely.
But before that, we're going to look at our review preview. And this week's a little bit special because we're going to be looking at another festival. Instead of a standalone piece of entertainment, we're going to be looking at a festival, and in particular, the Jewish Film Festival.
So it finished last week on the 18th of November. It just wrapped up. But there were a lot of great movies, and I think a couple of them are still going to be available on Netflix. So the Jewish Film Festival is an annual festival that goes on usually in the month of November, and it basically plays pieces of entertainment or movies that were made by Jewish filmmakers or are centered around Jewish topics or ideas. So this is a really cool time, of course, for my community, the Jewish community. It plays in Caulfield, where most Jews live, and it's a lot of fun to explore some of those day-to-day topics that the Jewish people usually talk about, you know, like the Holocaust and tradition and all those different things. So I'm just going to mention a couple of movies that did play, and you should be able to find them. One is 80, and also a lot of these movies are from all over the world. They're not just Australian. They're made from all these different countries. So the first one is 87 Children, and my grandmother went to see this, and she highly, highly recommended it. It's centered during World War II and how these 87 orphans are saved during World War II, which is one of them. Another great one is, really interestingly enough, it's called Seder Masochism, and I want to give a little bit of context for this. So every year the Jewish people celebrate the holiday of Passover or Pesach, and we have a big ordered dinner called a Seder meaning order, where we explore the story of the Jewish people escaping from slavery in Egypt. So this is it's an animated movie, and it looks like a bit of a parody of the story, which I find to be kind of funny. That looks pretty good. And then another great one is a documentary about these Jewish twins and how they're separated from birth and how they try to find each other again. So there were
a lot of diverging narratives and topics, which is really, really nice, you know.
Absolutely.
To have that and to have that kind of that depth and complexity, and
absolutely,
to have that across a really, really fantastic festival.
Yeah, and in previous years there have been a lot of great movies that explore those ideas of tradition and upholding it. It's a big topic of debate in the Jewish community.
Relates to our theme today.
Absolutely.
Which is really exciting.
Absolutely.
So it was a really, really successful festival. So it finished on Wednesday, the 21st of November, and it was a really, really successful festival. It received a lot of critic praise for it, and I think it's great because these festivals, they're so fantastic in that they just bring to the stage completely new pieces of entertainment, which are really, really unique and really, really special. And that's why they're just increasing in popularity every year. So unfortunately, it has finished now, but think about it for next year, because it's definitely going to be back in Melbourne.
Definitely. And have a look into what movies are now available on Netflix. Some of them will still be available.
Yes.
So while you're doing that, we'll be on our way into our first song, I'm On My Way by The Proclaimers.
And that was I'm On My Way by The Proclaimers. You're with Sass, the Screen Air and Stage Show, with Nick Angus and Hannah Schauder. Happy Sunday morning, everyone. Hope you're enjoying this very fine Sunday morning. Another beautiful day. We are looking at tradition today. A really, really interesting theme, a lot of depth to it. And we're really, really excited to talk about our different pieces of entertainment and the different traditions they cover.
We are going Johnny Deep on this. Well, Johnny Depp, but Johnny Depp on this topic.
Love that.
So for our screen segment, we're going to be looking at Crazy Rich Asians,
yes,
which is a new movie that just came out a few months ago,
yeah,
and really has been like top in the charts.
It really has. It was actually, I read the other day, it was supposed to be a Netflix original. And so it was made for the big screen in the end. And I think, well, they will be so, so happy, the producers behind this, because it has been a huge box office success. I think Crazy Rich Asians and Black Panther have been the two highest grossing films of this year.
Wow.
So I think it's a fantastic success. And I think what we're going to look at today in regards to how it covers tradition will be really, really interesting. But first, as always, a quick synopsis. So Rachel Chu is happy to accompany her longtime boyfriend Nick to his best friend's wedding in Singapore. She's also surprised to learn that Nick's family is extremely wealthy and he's considered one of the country's most eligible bachelors. Thrust into the spotlight, Rachel must now contend with jealous societies, quirky relatives, and something far, far worse. Nick's disapproving mother. Sorry about the stutter there.
Socialites.
Socialites.
I'm very nervous.
But that is the brief synopsis, and I don't know, it doesn't give much away. It's quite subtle in what we can expect, but it's a really, really nice romantic comedy film. I think a lot of romantic comedies these days, they tend to just, you know, follow that same structure of, you know, climax, there's a, you know, there's an introduction, then there's a problem, then there's a climax, and there's a resolution. And I think that's a fantastic structure to follow. And I think what this film does so well is it does it in a new kind of fresh way. It's not, you know, old and tiresome. It's really, really fresh. It's really, really clean. And it's just, it's a lot of fun. The humour in it is fantastic.
Definitely gives me my Big Fat Greek Wedding, yeah, vibes.
Absolutely.
And I think it's almost exactly like that, but Asian.
If we hadn't covered My Big Fat Greek Wedding earlier on, I think we would definitely be talking about that today. So, but I think this is a fantastic other film to talk about the ideas of tradition. And I think to start off with, I wanted to bring in one quote that really, really, that comes from this film, but also really supports this idea of tradition. And this is from the character of Nick Young. "Ever since I can remember, my family has been my whole life." So this film really plays into that idea of family as the centerpiece.
Absolutely.
Family as the keystone and family as the upholder of tradition. And I think what's really, really interesting is that I was reading a bit of an article on Crazy Rich Asians in that Nick's family have created traditions and customs that preserve the sanctity of their money and bloodline. So they've created this really, really strong, you know, bloodline, this really, really, yeah, this sanctity in which they have upheld for many, many centuries now, many, many years, because they are, you know, they have been considered the richest family in Singapore, one of the richest families for decades now.
My initial thoughts with looking at this movie and looking at the plot is it's not so much a cultural tradition, it's more status. And
yes,
you know, and look, I think it just so happens to be an Asian family because you know, I think those Asian storylines are a little bit underrepresented in at least in Australian cinema, Australian cinema.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think there is sort of, you know, a the comedic sense in, you know, portraying Asians and how full on they, yes, are, you know, as that kind of very subtle stereotype.
Yes.
But what I found is this isn't just about, you know, family tradition and, oh, you got to marry in the family, whatever. It's pure wealth.
Yes.
And it's about, this is what we do with our money. This is who deserves to have access to our money. And this is who you've got to marry in order to uphold that wealth and security. So I think it's a very different kind of tradition.
And the female protagonist, Rachel, she almost challenges the sanctity of bloodline and wealth. So I think that's kind of where, you know, the uproar starts. That's where the, you know, the conflict starts, and that she's not one of these people that, you know, has lived a very rich and wealthy life. She lives in New York as well, so she's considered an Asian American. So she comes into this scene as Nick's, you know, girlfriend, soon to be lifelong partner, and she's not, you know, she's not one of them, you could even say. And so she challenges this sanctity. And this brings up a new point, and I think this is going to be a really big discussion point of the day, is that is there, do you think that a balance exists between tradition and change?
Mm.
And do you think a balance needs to exist? Or do you think that, yeah, it's really, really interesting. Do you think there needs to be a balance between, you know, tradition and the tradition that we keep close to us, but also about change and going into the future? And
can we adapt to...
Can we adapt? And is adaptation upholding those important?
Traditions? I think that's a really good question. Mm. And I think we will definitely be seeing a lot of that, especially in, you know, pieces like Fiddler on the Roof.
Yes.
And but this is, you know, I think this is no different. You know, if you're a very wealthy family, you're used to keeping it in the family and having the security of trusting who your children are going to marry so that they're not going to run away with your money.
And you can see where, you know, the concern is coming from Nick's mother, because she's, you know, she's a very successful woman and her husband has been very successful and she wants the best for her son. And you can really see that. But at the same time, you kind of question, can she maybe just learn to adapt and change? And is that a... Is that an important step for her, or is her tradition more important for that?
So. Another really interesting thing I found is our male protagonist, sort of hiding the fact that he is rich from Rachel, and, you know, her having to sort of almost learn the hard way. Mm. I also found that to be really interesting and could be interpreted that he's almost hiding from tradition, trying to run away, not having to... you know, in a sense, conform to those more conservative ideals that his parents want for him. So I found that to be really interesting. So Timothy Steens, who's a lecturer in the University of Sydney, wrote in the conversation about how that it was really amazing to see that Asian representation, not just generally in the media, but also from like that wealthy point of view.
Yeah.
And that generally when we look at more wealthy families, you know, in a sense, we see more white people, for example, English, you know, more British people.
Yes.
And it's interesting to actually look at it from the more Asian perspective and see what wealthy life is like in their eyes.
Yeah.
So I found that to be a really interesting point as well, not just representation, but also that tradition kind of goes across all ways of life.
Yeah, and all statuses as well. You see it across all social statuses. The tradition is... at the core of many people's lives, no matter what their status. So
absolutely.
I think in this case, you can say that tradition is, you know, so divergent in that it can exist in so many different levels, but it is also a very strong core of one's being and one's living. And I think one point we're also going to bring up is that, does it take one person to redefine someone else's tradition?
Oh, so that'll be coming up next. This is SASS, the Screen Air and Stage Show with Hannah Shadow and Nick Angus. This is Sia. Clap your hands.
And you are with SASS, the Screen Air and Stage Show with Hannah Shouter and Nick Angus. Happy Sunday morning, everyone. I hope you're having a fantastic day and got lots planned for this weekend. We are reaching Christmas so, so quickly. I can't believe how quickly it's coming up.
How insane. And Hanukkah.
We've got so much coming up.
All these traditions.
And actually, speaking of traditions, Hannah, we were discussing the other day, we are thinking, now don't get too excited because it's still in the pending pot, let's say.
Pending
we are
pot,
thinking
I like that.
Of doing a 24 days of SASS.
All right.
So food for thought, everyone. If you have any ideas of what we could do for this, because we're still thinking about it, but we're like, we have to celebrate Christmas and Hanukkah. We have to make them special. So if you've got 24 ideas for SASS, we're going to do a 24 days of it, and we're going to make it extra, extra special. So send through ideas, send through. And if you have any comments about today's show, please send them through our socials, facebook.com/SASS and our Twitter account, SASS_show, as well as our Instagram, SASS_show. But back to Downtown Abbey. Now, I want to ask Hannah, this is a bit of a question, and it relates to tradition in a way. These days there are modern pieces of entertainment that show us something historic. We've talked about The Crown, and that does a really, really good job in, you know, revitalizing, you know, the British monarchy into something that we as young people really, really enjoy.
Mm.
How, upon watching Downton Abbey, did you feel like you could connect to it because it did do the same as The Crown, or do you think it was a little bit more refined and more historic?
Well, look, I think... There is that sense of fiction in it as well, because it is deliberately set in a time when a lot is happening. You know, sinking of the Titanic, World War One is a major part of it. I don't know. I mean, I think it is still relatable because we still have a monarchy today in, well, you know, at least in England and lots of other countries in Europe. And you do see, you know, all of...
You see a lot of British royal families.
Definitely.
British families, aren't they? Like, British families like this that do still exist.
That's right. Though it actually is a really interesting week to be talking about tradition, because the British royal family announced recently that Princess Charlotte will now actually be eligible to take the throne if King George cannot, rather than it going straight to King Louis. Mm-hmm. So I found that to be really interesting that they're already changing tradition, and absolutely, it's happening in everyday life. There's still that, you know, very traditional, you know, monarch behavior of how they dress and behave and what they do. I mean, you know, the princess, the queen, Elizabeth doesn't have her own passport, you know, because it's all in her name.
Yeah.
What a mood, right?
Yeah, I know. So yeah, you're talking about the crown, and you think that do you think it parallels to Downton Abbey in that we can appreciate it, or do you think Downton Abbey is a little bit more mature?
I think we can still draw parallels.
Yeah, and you can still appreciate
because of the insider scoop, in a sense. Yeah.
And it does it in a way. And I think like balancing change and tradition, I think this film this TV series balances old and new, in that it balances, you know, the old mise-en-scene, the costumes, the setting. It's a beautiful setting. But then it balances with the new cinematography. The cinematography is fantastic. You know, you get these beautiful camera angles and these modernised twists to the camera angles. So I think it's really, really nice that it does find that balance, like the balance between change and tradition. And I think it's why it's become so prominent today. It is a fantastic TV series. And if it has finished for now, the TV series, but a film is coming out. So
it's pretty insane when you think about it. Haven't really heard of a movie coming from a TV series.
And it'll be
except
really
for Gilmore Girls, of course.
But it'll be really, really, as I said, it's quite a rare occasion. It'll be really interesting to see how it does transition from one medium to the other. So that is our discussion on tradition for Downton Abbey. Hope you enjoyed that. It is a little hard, I feel, to talk about tradition because there is so many different depths to it. But I think what we covered today was really, really good, and looking at how different characters represent, you know, a balance between change and tradition, how some characters on one side of the spectrum and how other characters on the other side of the spectrum, and how some find that balance, like like Lady Mary Crawley. So
absolutely. So stick around for our stage segment coming up. We're going to be talking about Fiddler on the Roof, and then after that we'll be doing our review preview for the preview segment. So stick around. This is Sass, the Screen Aaron Stage Show.
And that was Hotel Stay by Client Liaison, another fantastic Australian band. They are touring a little bit at the moment. They're in different festivals. I believe they're playing over New Year's Eve at Beyond the Valley. So if you want to check them out, go to that. But they are playing, and they're also playing at Botanic Gardens, I believe, next year. So,
oh, very nice.
So they're a fantastic Australian band. I've seen them live at the Australian Open before, and I love them to bits. So, yeah, another option there for you alongside Sia's old album. But for now, we are back with Sass, the Screen Aaron Stage Show, with Nick Angus and Hannah Schauder. And today we are focusing on the complex yet compelling topic of tradition and how tradition can be challenged, adapted, and ultimately, as Hannah said before, what could be the consequences of denying tradition? But for now, we're going to go to an old classic. And this is a play that, this is a musical that I really do adore. It is a fantastic musical. It has a lot of different themes to it, including tradition. And I think it really, really explores tradition in a really complex way, and through its characters, but also through the events that happen. So for those of you who don't know, we are talking about Fiddler on the Roof, and I'm really, really excited, and we're going to give you a quick synopsis before we delve into discussion. So in pre-revolutionary Russia, a Jewish peasant contends with marrying off three of his daughters while growing anti-Semitic sentiment threatens his village. So a very quick synopsis there, but it really focuses on how this man has to contend with, you know, his three young daughters marrying, as well as all these views that are going around about his tradition and about his culture. So, Hannah, what were your first opinions on seeing this musical?
So what's just popped on right now is actually the opening song of Fiddler on the Roof, which is Tradition. And
that's fitting. That is very fitting for today.
Very fitting to the musical. And what I really like about that, about this opening song, is there's four verses in it. There's the papa, the mama, the son, and the daughter. And each verse outlines what their role is. Mm-hmm. The papa provides for the family. The mama, you know, keeps the home. The son studies and marries a good Jewish girl. And the daughter marries a good Jewish boy. And that's pretty much it. This is a fantastic musical. I had the pleasure of seeing it New Year's Eve of a couple of years ago.
Wow, that'd be awesome.
And this is a really cool musical, just from, well, from the tradition point of view, because in case you haven't heard already, I'm Jewish and I come from a Jewish family. Yes, and for us, like, tradition is a very important part of our identity and how we express our faith. So this musical has a really cool exploration of those ideas. Mm. So I will look that when you think of Fiddler on the Roof, tradition really is what the musical is all about. You know, like you said in the synopsis, Tevye, who's the who's our Jewish peasant, is deciding what to do about his three daughters and marrying them off, because as it is tradition that the daughters are married off to whoever is deemed fit by the matchmaker. This is still a tradition that's pretty common in more religious Jewish communities nowadays, where a matchmaker will provide matches for a woman to marry rather than, sort of picking ourselves. So it's really interesting what the daughters do and how they demonstrate those sort of extremes of changing tradition.
Yeah.
So for our first one, the first daughter, she, finds a man that's not completely approved by the father, who's the local tailor. But still asks for his permission and they're allowed to marry. But she sort of breaks that tradition of, not finding someone that was, finding someone by choice rather than, sort of put to her. Then the second one chooses the man who is Jewish, but, doesn't ask for her father's blessing. She says, "I'm going to marry him anyway, but if you give us your blessing, then that's cool."
Yes.
Then the third one marries a non-Jewish Russian boy, a Russian soldier. And at the time, it's a really interesting piece of history that Fiddler on the Roof is set in, because it's set in during the Russian pogroms, where Jewish towns and communities were being destroyed and people were being killed. So the Russians were the enemy. It was under the Tsar. And she ends up being excommunicated from her family because she sort of married out. Kind of went off the derech, as we'd put it.
It's very intense, isn't it?
Really intense. And so this is where we come to those ideas of the consequences of changing tradition. And all throughout the movie, you see Tevye deciding, he says, trying to balance tradition. It's like a fiddler on the roof.
Yes.
That idea of, can we balance it? And you see his internal struggle throughout the movie of trying to uphold these long-held traditions while battling with these more modern extreme ideals of his daughters.
And that raises the question, Hannah, of, do you think a balance exists or should exist between tradition and desire? You know, these three young girls, they want to marry these men, but the father is not so approving. So do you believe that there exists, there is this desire from these young girls, but then there is this underlying sense of tradition? Do you think a balance exists, or do you think one should ultimately be favoured in the end?
It's hard to say. Yeah. I mean, you're very good at throwing out these questions that, really get me thinking afterwards, long after the show.
Yeah.
I don't know. Look, I think there are some moments of acceptance in the movie. In the musical, sorry. Mm-hmm. This is also a movie, but in the musical where Tevye says, well, maybe it's okay to change tradition a little bit. But then you have moments of, how dare you ruin our tradition? And this is what keeps us going.
And I think I want to just draw on one thing. I think the ideas that are raised in this in regards to tradition and balance, they're so prominent. They were so prominent for the time that it was released as well. The original 1964 Broadway production was nominated for 10 Tony Awards and it won 9.
Wow.
So 9 out of 10.
Insane.
And that success, it resonates to today because it's still such a popular musical, but for even back then in 1964, for the themes it expressed and ideas it brought about around tradition and balance, it's really, really nice and pleasing to know that was acknowledged back then for that, and it is still acknowledged today. So, look, 9 out of 10 Tony Awards is not bad at all. And then the 1991 revival of it, so these days that musicals and plays that can be revived, and these are acknowledged at the annual Tony Awards, it won Best Revival Musical. So you can't get much better than that. It is staying prominent and it is staying fresh and it is staying really, really, really deep in the ideas that are expressed through it and how it portrays, tradition in a family sense, because tradition is at the heart of every family, and normally every family normally has some sort of tradition or culture surrounding their life and their day-to-day life. So it is fantastic. And as Hannah said, it was adapted into a film in 1971. And it got the highest grossing film of the year. So
I mean, you really can't go wrong.
You really can't.
And I think sort of branching out a little bit for a quick moment, this movie is set in the village Anatevka. Mm-hmm. And in this in the song tradition, it's not just, you know, outlining the roles of the family, but it's actually outlining the roles of the community.
Yeah.
You have the rabbi who's responsible for educating the boys. You have the matchmaker who's responsible for, you know, putting couples together. Mm. It's not just religious tradition. It's also communal tradition. Mm. What's everybody's role? How it's always been.
And roles is a huge part of tradition. You know, everyone has their specific role, as well as people, as people age, people come about with new roles, and that's all part of tradition. And so I think that exists with all the different, you know, communities and groups we've looked at today, is that, you know, as you kind of not only move up maybe the social status, but move up in age as well, you are accustomed with a new role as part of your tradition.
Absolutely. And with that, actor Harvey Firstein, who plays Tevye on Broadway, said in an interview that he's played the show in San Francisco, Fort Worth, Atlanta, and Toronto. I've played it all over and the reaction is the same. When I was on Broadway, I'd look out into the house and there would be Hasidic Jews and nuns or maybe a high school cheerleader team in town for a competition, and they all sat with rapt attention watching it. They all got it. The day the boys finished writing it and put it up on the stage, it was part of our culture.
Yeah.
And I find that to be really interesting how, even though this musical is centered around Jewish tradition and a Jewish community, very much the same with Crazy Rich Asians, it can still relate to all audiences.
All audiences, and that's fantastic. And I think that's why it was such a success and why Crazy Rich Asians and Downton Abbey have been such big successes, because they do have this focus on their own culture and own tradition, but it parallels to everyday life and our society. And it makes us question, well, how do we think about our tradition? How do we think about our culture? And I think that these films, you know, that's what these pieces of entertainment, that's what they're trying to do. And I think it's fantastic to see new films and new pieces and new TV series and new theatre productions that are really exploring these deep ideas of tradition and not just giving a one-dimensional view, but giving a view that can really, really impact people that have a different tradition, have a different value. So I think it's fantastic, and I think the questions we've raised today in regards to tradition are really, really important. I think the first one, which was from Crazy Rich Asians, is, you know, does tradition, is there a preservance of tradition? Can tradition be preserved and be carried out for so long, or does it need to adapt?
Mm.
From Downton Abbey, well, maybe it's finding a balance between tradition and then the new and the change. So maybe it's about finding a balance, not necessarily adapting fully, but finding that balance.
That's right.
And then maybe with Fiddler on the Roof, it's about...
Well, I think it's about learning about the consequences. I think Fiddler on the Roof is also... almost a bit of a microcosm for what it continues to happen in the Jewish community today, where we're experiencing changes to Jewish law and tradition and people not upholding the same traditions from long ago.
Yeah.
And is that affecting the community? Is it better?
Yes.
Is it worse because we're losing that continuity? And all of those things, and we can see that. So for now, it's been a great discussion. We're going to go to a quick song break, and we'll be right back for our review preview.
You are on SASS, the Screen Air and Stage Show, with Hannah Schauder and Nick Angus. We'll be back soon.
And welcome back to SASS, the Screen Air and Stage Show, with Hannah Schauder and Nick Angus, every Sunday morning.
That was Can't Touch It by Ricky Lee, another Australian
artist.
What
a bop. What a bop.
What a bop that is. That is a song that never gets old, and we're really liking our Australian artists this morning. We're loving them.
We love that. Thank you very much, Aussie artists, for being a part of the show today.
Thank you.
So we've been talking about tradition, and we've explored Crazy Rich Asians, Downton Abbey, and Fiddler on the Roof. During the song break just now, we actually got a text in from one of our listeners, Oliver, on what he thought about Fiddler on the Roof. So what he said is, Fiddler on the Roof represents both the best and worst of tradition, the unity and the tearing apart. And I thought that's a really accurate, you know, sort of statement summarizing what tradition can be and more so what it is in Fiddler on the Roof, but of course in general, and how it can unite us, but it can also create ridges and division. Mm. And I was saying to Nick just now during the break that it's interesting that there's lots of changes happening in all of our traditions and all of our cultures that we actually can see reflected in the entertainment industry, and how interesting that is. I actually found a really good quote. Tradition remains alive only when we struggle with it. And I found that to be really interesting. I mean, I relate to it personally from the Jewish perspective, but with any culture, really, you know, it's true. When we just accept tradition as it is and move on, are we truly living it? And it is only when we need to understand it and work with it and maybe even try to change it, that's when we are truly living with tradition. And that,
and I think it comes back to that idea that tradition is alive. I don't think tradition will ever die. And I think even though it adapts, as we've learned in how it can adapt throughout piece of entertainment, it's going to stay alive to this day. And I think it's fantastic.
Absolutely.
It's so fantastic to, you know, go out and meet someone and they've got a whole different tradition, a whole different culture. When I first met you, Hannah, I was so enthused to learn about your Jewish heritage because I obviously don't have knowledge of that. So it's really, really fantastic. And I think it's just, it's so awesome to learn about someone else's tradition and let that kind of influence you and question about how your tradition is different and how it's similar.
Absolutely. But so we are coming up to the end of our show. So we're going to head over to that review preview.
Oh, what was that, Hannah?
The review preview.
And we're going to preview another film today. Now, this is a bit of an interesting choice, but I'm really interested to see how it relays on screen. So it is Second Act, starring Jennifer Lopez. A quick synopsis for those of you out there who have no idea what this film's going to be about. Struggling with frustrations from unfulfilled dreams, 40-year-old Maya gets the chance to prove to Madison Avenue that street smarts are as valuable as book smarts and that it's never too late for a second act. I first saw
this. Is this Legally Blonde?
Well, that's the funny thing. I think there's a few little different questions I'm going to quickly raise about this. The first thing is, I find it's really cool that there's these, you know, actresses that are also singers and they also have all these different mediums that they're part of and they're still kind of diverging around and being a part of, you know, different, like, singing. They're being part of film. And it's really, really interesting. I know Jennifer Lopez, she was in Monster in Law. She's been on What to Expect When You're Expecting. So can we kind of know her from this? And I think this is kind of a break out of nowhere. Mm. So it'll be really interesting to see how this film relates to her old work and how, whether it, you know, heightens her as an individual or whether it kind of just turns off, because I think these days you see a lot of, you know, pop stars going into films, a lot of film stars going into singing. We saw Lady Gaga in A Star Is Born.
Absolutely.
And that made her so much more prominent than she is today, which is fantastic. So it'll be interesting. I think one of the points was how this is going to affect J-Lo's reputation. And whether it's going to, because it is, you know, it is her film. I think in the other films she's been like kind of part of a fantastic cast. So she's been, you know, with other people, but this is really a film for her.
Her own thing. Very interesting. So we'll be sure to review that once we've had a little check out. But until then, that is the end of the show for today. Thank you very much for tuning in. You'll be able to find all of our shows on omnistudio.com/sass to hear today's episode, but also last week's and the week before's and so on and so forth, and all of those episodes, as well as you'll be able to find the links on our Facebook page, facebook.com/sass, where we post some exclusive photos and other little goodies, as well as the music playlist from every week. Nick is amazing and puts all of the songs that we play on Facebook so that you can download them yourself and have a little bit of a boogie.
Yeah, we had a bit of a boogie today with Can't Touch It by Ricky Lee. So
true.
If you want to have the same boogie,
lots of great
that song.
Box happening.
And just for you those out there who would like to go see Second Act, it comes out nationwide on the 6th of December. So yeah, we're really, really excited. I think we're definitely going to review that in the future.
Absolutely. So until then, keep up with your screen, air, and stage. In other words,
stay sassy.
I just broke tradition there. Usually,
we'll leave you on that cliffhanger.
And we'll see you all next week.